This is the time for our speaker to share her experience, strength, and hope for approximately 30 minutes. All right, Gail.
Hi. Thank you, Maureen, for asking me to share my experience, strength, and hope. I wouldn't be here if it weren't for 12-step programs. And anything I share is my opinion. The big book is my the big book, well-worn. That's where the answers are. This is just my experience, strength, and hope. So if you don't hear something from me, go to another meeting, because that's what I do. If I don't hear what I need, but I always walk away with something. So my name is Gail, and I'm a grateful compulsive overeater and anorexic. And I came into these rooms through the beverage program in 1983. I was 32 years old. I was 100 pounds overweight, and I had been sober. I got sober December 16th, 82. And in March, the girl that took me under my wing, under her wing, I went to an AA meeting, and I was wearing white sweatpants, and I weighed about 225 pounds. And she said, you know, at your weight, you shouldn't really be wearing white sweatpants. And I don't know if I was kind of just still zoned out from being sober. I didn't take offense to it. And she said, but there is a 12-step program I do feel that would really help you. And she had been telling me to pick her up and go to meetings and do all these things. She was very active. And when she spoke, I thought, you know, I'll give it a try. Well, back then in 83, there were meetings at the Glendale Memorial Hospital, and hospitals were very open to having meetings. They even had a eating disorders clinic there. And that meeting had over 200 people, and they had a stage. And I'm like, I was just bowled over. I have never heard people share or the honesty. And I go, oh my God, I found my tribe. These are my people. They understand that I can binge and throw away my food in the trash can, and the next morning take a rake to get it out, because God, what was I thinking? I threw away any number of things and I was going to eat it that morning. But the night before, I was done with it. So just to give you a little bit of past history, I'm 71 years old. I have, I'm coming up on 39 years of sobriety. I am 12 and a half years abstinent, but I did get abstinent and had 7 years of abstinence, but I lost it. And then I was out for approximately 19 years trying to do it on my own, and I couldn't do it. And I stayed sober, but I could not get abstinent, and I had a lot of shame. As a little girl, I was underweight. I hated to eat. I didn't like anything. I was very picky. And many nights, my mom would make me sit at the dinner table and tell me if I didn't eat that she was going to serve it to me for breakfast. And, you know, I have the ism, and I could probably attend every 12-step program. I have all of it. When they say it, I go, oh, yeah, I can identify. So, but the two are the drinking and the compulsive eating or under eating. My highest weight was over 350 pounds when I came back after my relapse. My lowest weight as an adult was 109 pounds. And I had tried to commit suicide. But I'll try to keep it a little bit linear. So I didn't like to eat. Somewhere around the age of six, life got a little tough. I had a little sister. I had a two-year younger brother. And I don't know, but I knew there was something wrong. And I knew that if I had this type of food, which I'm not going to mention, it wasn't sugar. And it's probably gaggy for a lot of people. But my dad was in the bathroom. My mom was gone. Or out shopping or something. And I went to him and I said, could I have a spoon of it? And he said, well, I don't know why you would do that, but sure. And so when I went to get a spoon, it wasn't your teaspoon. I got My mom had a silverware set of the large serving spoons, you know, huge. And I thought, I said a spoon, I didn't say what size spoon. And I got in there and it was like that feeling of like, oh my God, you know, there was some type of relief at 6 years old. So you kind of see where I was coming from. My dad drank, there was a lot of violence in my home. Now they call it PTSD and I'm sure I had it. He worked very hard. I had a brother and a sister, and he built our home in Sylmar. I lived in Hollywood. He built a home in Sylmar. We had horses and ducks and chickens. And, you know, we looked like the Ozzie and Harriet family from the outside. My mom was, and she still is, she has dementia, but she was an anorexic. My dad was anorexic and also a compulsive eater. My mom was a sugar addict. And my dad drank, and there was just screaming and yelling. And when I was 13 years old, he had built another house on the same street where we lived, and it was bigger and more beautiful, probably the most beautiful house on the street. And he took his gun, and he said he was going to shoot himself. And I ran out of the house, and I heard the gunshot go off. And I thought, oh my God, my dad killed himself. And I fell to my knees crying and screaming. And I ran back into the house and he was walking down the steps and he looked at us and he said, did I scare you? And I mean, for a 13-year-old, that's pretty traumatizing. But I called the police on him several times. My brother told me, I don't know, but he said my dad hit my mom. I think I had blackouts. I just don't think I could handle that kind of information. But I went to 12 years of Catholic school, and my highest weight, I'm 5'8", was 145 pounds, and I felt obese. I was always dieting on some kind of diet. The girls that I hung out with, you know, we were eating Jell-O and cottage cheese. And, you know, I wasn't really overweight. My real weight came in my early 20s when I started I got out of the house. I compulsively ate. Well, that's not true, because if you're from the 50s, there was a diet food called Metrical. And at 9 years old, my mother had me on Metrical. So I could eat breakfast and lunch. And then when everybody sat down to dinner, she gave me a can of Metrical. And I'm looking at everybody eat, and I'm like, and I get a can of Metrical. I said, could you please freeze it? So at least it's something that I'm chewing or whatever. And I was on the cleanup committee, and, you know, it started that binge and restrict type of attitude. So, you know, as I was doing cleanup, I ate all the leftovers and, you know, but I was active and I wasn't really overweight. So it looked really good from the outside. Then I moved out at 17. I worked from the time I was 16, and I paid for my schooling. My parents got divorced when I was 15, and I was working at a place. I live in Glendale, and I got a job from my babysitter at a finance company, and I had bought drugs, and I got arrested for grand theft auto and narcotics, which is a felony. Both are felonies. And I was 18 years old, and I went to jail, and I was hitchhiking. I didn't steal the car. I did have the drugs, but everybody else was underage, and these boys that we were hitchhiking with, of course I was hitchhiking, it was in the 60s. And I went to jail, and I was really embarrassed, and I didn't know what I was going to do. And I finally, after 5 or 6 days, I was in a holding place. I broke down and I called my mom, and she immediately put my grandmother's house up and got me out on bail. I did a year of probation. And so, you know, I'm trying to lay a little foundation of where, you know, how my thinking was progressing. And I have to say, the first time I drank, I was 15. I called my mom, I cursed at her, and she hit me and gave me a black eye, and I had to go to school with a black eye. You know, I had issues. And so anyways, I did a year of probation. I went to therapy. I drank, I used, I binged. I, you know, had a lot of relationships. I did a lot of incomprehensible demoralization through both food and through the beverages. And I proceeded to get arrested four more times. My mother, I believe, enabled me by trying to rescue me and not making me responsible, but I think it was her guilt. And anyways, you know, I was a mess, and I already felt like I had this big scarlet letter on my name, on my head. So I couldn't really get a very decent job because I couldn't be, you know, I had a record, you know, and this is what I told myself. So I always worked in bars, and, you know, when I wasn't working in bars, I tried to work at, like, you know, as a nurse's aide, just, you know, one thing after another. I finally got a profession. I was a manicurist, and I worked in Beverly Hills, and I made a lot of money. And, you know, my eating was just, either I was starving. At about the age of 27, one of my customers offered to pay for a protein-sparing fast diet, and I did that. And, you know, I believe for me that compulsive overeaters and people who need 12-step programs are very, very bright, and we can accomplish almost anything we put our minds to. And, you know, I was, up until then, I had been on lots of diets. This was the queen of diets, you know. I didn't have to eat. And if I didn't have to eat, that was my solution, because then I didn't have to stop. And eventually I stopped taking the protein, and my weight just kept dropping and dropping and dropping. And that's when I got down to 109 pounds. And I did that for about a year and a half. I stopped eating, and I would go for 6 weeks without food, and then I would binge. And when you're as emaciated as I was, any food in your system made you look like you had a tummy. And I think, oh my God. And you got to understand, I was in therapy. I was, you know, trying to seek help. And the last thing I thought was that, you know, I was an alcoholic. But once I got sober, I could see it. So I've been on all types of medication, Haldol. Well, I tried to commit suicide when I was 27. And the doctors looked at me and they said, you know, you don't, right now, and I took poison. And they said they didn't have an antidote. And then I'm like, I really want to live. I'm, you know, I was trying to get help. And my mother, throughout the years, paid for high-end therapists and, you know, like $150 an hour back then, and nothing helped. And so they put me on these medications. And then I decided, I met this guy, he was a manic depressive. And I said, that's what I am. I'm a manic depressive. And so I went to the doctor, and we're very manipulative, and I know how to get what I want. So I listed to the doctor my symptoms, like my ex-husband. Well, I eventually married him, and got the medication. And then 3 years later, I decided, well, I'm really not that. And I just went off the medication. Self-diagnosed, and I self-medicated also. And so, you know, I would say I probably had about 14 years of therapy. And what's different for me in these rooms is that I need to take action. You know, I'm not against therapy, anybody, you know, outside issues. I think that, you know, if we need it, we need it. For me, it was a catch-22 because it made me not responsible to look at my own defects. And physically, there's nothing wrong with me. When you have a ailment and you need medication, that's great. But, you know, I was a liar, and I was going to get what I wanted, and I knew how to do it. And so what's different for me is that I take the 12 steps, and I take them very seriously. And they have helped me. I wouldn't be here if I wasn't in this fellowship. So after that suicide attempt, I proceeded to marry this guy who took lithium, and we were married about a year and a half, got divorced. Then I, you know, did all these different diets up and down in weight. And I want to talk about the recovery. So December 16th, 1980, whoops, sorry. In December 16th, 1982, I had picked up a busboy at Da Vinci's restaurant next to where I lived, and I was driving him home the next morning into South LA, and he looked at me and he said, you know, you're crazy. And I said, I know. I wasn't going to argue with him. at 7 a.m. and dropped him off, went to work. And about 11 o'clock, I started crying and I could not stop crying. And I went up to the mezzanine at my work and I called my ex-husband and he said, go to a 12-step meeting and do a woman's dad. And he said, you're an alcoholic. And I said, oh, no, because when I was 18, my dad tried to get me sober. I went to meetings. And I said, no, I'm not. He said, honest, you are. And he was my Eskimo. And that's how I got into OA. So I went to my first meeting, like I said, and it was like I found my tribe. I heard people sharing totally honest things they did with food. I just couldn't believe. And I took to it like a duck to water. I got a sponsor. I worked the steps. I tried to diet when I first came in, and this isn't a diet and calories club, but I think I was eating about 800 calories a day, but that's because of my issues with restricting. So I got a sponsor. She had a lot of years of recovery. She didn't push me to do a fourth step. She just said, go to meetings, do writing. I was in constant contact with her. I had gotten a food back then. They had something of choice. And, you know, I tried to follow it. And she guided me into an eating plan that I could absolutely live with. There were two foods I didn't eat. And the weight just came off. And it wasn't like I was, you know, I think my restricting helped a little bit. But, and they said also don't date for a year. So I listened to what you said. I didn't date for a year, but then in a year I took a hostage and I decided that, you know, now that I had a year of abstinence and I was 225, I think I went down to 125. My game was on. I went to a lot of meetings between the two programs. Very active, sponsored, prayed and meditated. I think in about 13 months, I had been working on my inventory on the fourth step. And one thing my sponsor said, and it's stayed with me all these years, is don't do it fast, do it thorough. So I laugh now. I think it took me about 7.5 to 8 hours to read it to her. And she sat there and listened. And I was rigorously honest. I told her things that I was going to take to my grave. I was raised in the 60s. I was sexually active. I mean, I wasn't a thief, but I did some really bad things. And I shared with her everything that I could possibly remember. And I don't remember it affecting me as much is that there was something I could feel on the inside kind of shifting, that somebody else knew my truth and what I had been. And I eventually got married to somebody in program about 4 years into it. I got pregnant right away. We separated at 3 months. I was 3 months pregnant. And, you know, I have a lot of defects and I have a lot of ideas. I would like to use the word magical, or that I can think things to make it go my way, like control. And, you know, over the years, I can't control anything, nothing. I can't control my food. I can't control other people. I can't control my life. I really see, you know, all of the things we say in our meetings, like, you know, let go, let God. Do God's will. Like, it was like, why would I do God's will? I know what I should be doing. And, you know, over the years, yes, I have surrendered to that idea. So anyways, I did my inventory, got married, we separated. And honestly, my son's 34 now. And he saw me go from, well, as a baby, he didn't really see me. But when he could recognize me, I had started gaining weight and I didn't eat the foods that were, I shouldn't be eating. And when I had him, I think it was about 2 years into it, is when I really started to play with my food. And, you know, I stayed in touch with people. And then the shame, I was getting a divorce. And I can remember I would take my dinner or my breakfast and eat it before midnight and then skip my bread. Crazy, you know, addict thinking, I can control this. And so I think when I went to court, I mean, I can remember my weights. When I traveled in Europe, I can remember my binges from 1978. I am a compulsive overeater. I'm crazy with food. But anyways, I was about a size 10 and I felt obese. And it's just my crazy thinking. I'm about an 8 or a 10 now. Anyways, so I went through the divorce and I really didn't want to raise a kid on my own. And I did it. I homeschooled him. I stayed sober. He moved out and I kept trying over the years. I would try to get it, you know, and this is not do it yourself program. I can't do it on my own. And my brother called me on February 9th. It was a Sunday, 2009. I was 59 years old. And he said, "How are you doing?" And I said, "Oh, I'm okay. But this and this is going on with work." He said, "You know, it's so funny. I talk to you and one day you're good and one day you're not so good with your job." And I was working at I was 350 pounds, working at a warehouse in Pacoima. And he said, "Why don't you go back to OA?" And I said, "You know, I've been thinking of it." And he said, "No, like I'm talking about today." And I said, "Yeah, maybe, but probably towards the end of the week." He said, "No, try to find a meeting." And I don't know what happened. I looked up a meeting. There was one going on. It was raining outside. I was a hot mess. I hated to take showers at that time because the water felt terrible on my body and I was so large. I would fall and I couldn't get up off the ground. I fell down in a pothole in Los Angeles and three people had to help me get up because I was so large. I couldn't get up. I went to the meeting on Maple. It's in the park. There were about 25 people there. And it was like I never left, you know. I heard you guys. I heard what you said. And I said, "Well, I'm going to come back for sure. You know, I need to be here." And as I was starting to walk out, I walked over to the literature table and then I edged my way out. And a woman was coming out the door and she goes, "Oh, are you a newcomer?" And I said, "No, I've had about a 19-year relapse." And she goes, "Well, here's my number." She goes, "What's your binge?" And I said, I told her. And she said, "You know, I don't care if you eat all day. Just don't eat that food for 30 days and consider yourself abstinent. Call me." I came home. Being stubborn as I am, I sat down and had my breakfast. Then I had my lunch. I called her. She goes, "You called me." And I said, "Yeah, I need help." And she goes, "Okay." So we started working the steps. And the very first thing I did in the first 4 months is I did an inventory on my ex-husband. You know, I was reading something in my literature this morning about resentment. And I can't afford it. It takes me down. And I knew that, but I resented him. I hated him. I gained 225 pounds out of anger and being mad. And you know what? I made it. He ended up passing away. He paid me minuscule money to raise my kid. And when he passed away, I got this large monthly stipend to do all the things my son at 15 needed to do. It was like I was taken care of and I couldn't see that. And today I will tell you, every morning I do my meditation, I do my prayers, and I have two little journals. And every morning I write down the blessings that, you know, have occurred, because Gail does not remember from today to tomorrow the goodness that happens to me. I can look at the negative, and I've done this for 2 years and, well, almost 2 years. And it's really, really helped me recognize that on a daily basis, my higher power is taking care of me. When I walked into the rooms, I had been raised Catholic, and I can remember at 18, I turned away from God. And, you know, the beauty of this program, this is me. I believe in a higher power, which I choose to call God. But over the years, I've seen many people, atheists, it doesn't matter. This program works for all of us. There is no judgment. You get to make your own decision. And I'm happy because, you know, today, what I have learned is I have a connection, and working with the sponsor has shown me how to have that connection with something I can't see. And I, higher power for me works through you guys, and I hear it. But also I have a direct connection with that higher power today. Take me a long time. Is it time?
You got 5 minutes.
Oh, great. Thank you so much. Anyways, so, you know, 2009, February 10th, I put pillows on the floor. I could not get down on my knees, but I bent one knee and I said, higher power, there will be a day when I will be back on, and thank you for this. And today I can get on my knees. I can hike. I went back to school. I'm studying right now for the LSAT. I got my realtor license. I'm a realtor. Is everything wonderful? No. At the end of April, I quit my job in a law office part-time because my boss was abusive to me and had been for the last few months. Today, I can recognize abuse. I never could, and I recognize it today, and proceeded to blow up the engine on my car. I don't have tons of money. And you know what? I'm standing. I have been taken care of. And I get to see how higher power works through. I just, miraculous what's happened. My son is 34. He never saw me drink. He saw me lose weight when he had never seen me really thin. And he was so, we hadn't seen each other for about a year when I lost my weight. And he just, he didn't recognize who I was. And, you know, I'm just so, it's great about the outside, but I will tell you the inside, the inner peace that I have today, I can't buy that. What has changed? My attitude towards myself, my attitude towards other people, being responsible for my actions, understanding that I'm not always going to get my way, that things don't always work out my way, because that was how I rolled. You know, if it's my way, great. If not, I'm out of here. And I get to see when, how I take care of myself, self-care. I heard a woman in the first year of my recovery in OA this time around, and she stood in front of us. She had 26 years of abstinence, and she looked beautiful on the inside and the out. And she said, you know, what's the difference today is that I love myself. And the tears just came down my eyes. I thought, what a concept, that she can love herself today. And, you know, I'm on that road. I'm so grateful for you guys. Thank you, Maureen, again, for asking me to be of service. It's an honor. I will end with that, and I can't wait to hear from you guys. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Gail. We're closing, so now, thank you, Gail, for your pitch and for being of service. It is now time for questions and answers until 10:55. So, anybody who's got any questions, please feel free. Thank you again, Gail, and welcome, Lynn. Thank you, everybody.
Very compulsive overeater. Gail. That was magnificent. You reflect all of the things that this program has done for us, what it's done for, you just tear me up. That was wonderful. The things that we have gone through regarding food is, no one understands this. Terrible, terrible compulsion. And the weight loss and the weight gain and the hopelessness and the suicidality, all those things that I've experienced also. And the concept of being able to love oneself when that just never was even in the realm of possibility. Just working these 12 steps, and stick it around for the miracle. I am so grateful to you. The time in for me is just great to hear you and to know that you are such a miracle and that every one of us is that miracle if we keep working this program. I can't tell you how much this means to me. You just tear me apart. I'm so glad you made it. Thank you.
My name is Nancy. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Nancy.
Gail, you really touched my heart because I couldn't really love myself either. And that's really the bottom line. Like, that's where the recovery comes from, getting rid of resentments and loving yourself. And that's the journey. Like, all that distraction because I hated myself so much, or all that, the drugs that I did. I'm from the valley too. So hitchhiking, becoming sexually active too young, the whole deal. Like, I was taking care of my mother when she should have been taking care of me. Or, you know, just the way the violence and the alcoholism and the valley drug scene. It's just, yeah. But that really is the bottom line. And God, I got so emotional. Lynn, recommitting yourself is a good idea, because I had 7 years of good abstinence and then lost it. And it took me 20 years to really get so desperate that I learned that it's about resentments and it's about self-love. That's the solution. That's what we get out of the 12 steps. That's the cure for me. And the big book, mine is in shreds. I've had it for over 20 years. I live and die by that book. So please keep coming back. It saved my life. And I you talked about, like, knowing what weight I was when I showed up to restaurants, or knowing where all the good restaurants were, or like knowing my weight when I traveled somewhere. Like, that was my gauge of how good I could feel about myself, or that was my, my crazy mind. But now I just, it's resentments that really was the killer thing for me. So getting rid of those, loving myself because I, like, how far I've come, not where I want to go, but how far I've come. So I really appreciate it. Your share really touched. Thank you.
I'm Natalie, compulsive overeater. Hi, everybody. And Gail, thank you so much for your share. And I'm not a Valley girl, but I come from the same Midwestern drug scene. And so it's not geographically special in that way. And what's really interesting is I was just telling my husband yesterday, something that he'd never heard me say before was that when I was a kid, I remember my dad, who was an alcoholic and violent with my mom sometimes, coming down the stairs once with his pistol in his hand and saying, "Hey, you better take this for me. I don't want to do something I will regret," to me. And, you know, just having lived in that crazy environment, it's so interesting that I haven't talked about that story in a long time, and then to hear yours today. But yeah, I mean, for me, for sure, self-love, it's such a thing that people go, you know, you could go, "Oh, self-love, that's such a new age psychological." No, it's a real thing. It's a real, honest to goodness. Like, I know I'm a human being. I know I'm going to have these emotions, and it is okay. And I'm not bad because of it. And I don't even, you know, for me, like what I did as a young woman, the sleeping around and what, so what? I slept around. Why is that a big deal? I did what I needed to do to stay alive, because otherwise I'm not here, right? Like, those are the, so I'm grateful that there was that option for me. I'm grateful that I had the alcohol and the drugs and the food. I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for them. They did become something not so good after a while, but holy cow, they helped me get through until I could find this program. So, yeah, I don't regret anything. I'm happy to be who I am. I'm really comfortable. I like myself, like not even just love, but I like myself. I want to spend time with me. I'm so happy to do that. And so thank you, everybody. And I'm happy to be here.
I'm Jennifer, compulsive overeater. Gail, thank you so much for sharing your story. And I got like really, I am really emotional actually in talking about, you know, knowing how much, just like, I don't know why it struck me this morning, but knowing how much you weighed at every vacation, at every picture. Oh yeah, what was I wearing? What was I not wearing? What was going on? And, you know, fuck, I mean, fucking today is like that. Do you know what I mean? And it's like, oh, I'm not wearing those outfits because it sounds so trivial, but I hope you understand. It is, you know, because I'm not cute enough to wear that outfit yet, but I will someday, and I'm living for that someday. You know, when it's everything's gonna be okay, because I can fit into any clothes I want to fit into. Or feel, and it's not just the clothes, just feeling comfortable in my body and feeling self-confident in my body. And I've been in a relationship and like, you know, talk about like a mirror, having a mirror, you know, the cat doesn't care what I look like naked running around the house, right? Like, no, that's easy. That's like the easy part. But, you know, having like another human being, and not that that person is judgmental at all, but it's all about what comes up for me standing in front of another human being, naked or not naked. But yeah, it's, that's just kind of what's going on for me. I'm grateful to be here. I need this program. I think I can do it on my own. I've been out there floating on my own. I haven't gone too far, but and you know, the things I forget, I've been in program for a fair amount of years. And I always say, you know, the more I do, the more meetings I go to, the more reading, the more calls, the more work with my sponsor and steps, the easier it is. I've said that like, I don't know how many times in the past. And then I'm like, I can do it all on my own. You know, I was like, I don't need that stuff. It'll be okay. I'll figure it out this time. Wow. That's my disease. And I'm grateful to be here. Thank you for listening and letting me share.
Thank you so much. It is now time to close the meeting. Thanks to our speaker, Gail. Thank you, Gail. And for those who gave service, we welcome back anyone who wishes to attend, no matter where they are in the recovery process. Would someone please read the promises? Carol, once I see your hand up, please feel free.
If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past, nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity, and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises? We think not.
We think not.
They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work for them.
After a moment, thank you so much. After a moment of silent meditation, would you please join me in the serenity prayer? God. Grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. Thy will, not mine, be done. Keep coming back. It works if you work it, Gail.
Thank you so much,
Gail. Everybody.
My pleasure. Thank you.
So appreciate you.